This is the Daily Knight for Monday, January 18, 2016. The Daily Knight supports Making Biscuits Cat Rescue, a 501c3 charity. If you like this podcast, please consider making a donation or adopting a rescue cat at makingbiscuits.org. I'm your host, Gerardo San Diego, and today's show is about monster and science fiction movies made outside of the United States. There are a lot of really good ones, especially we are so spoiled in the United States in terms of any kind of movie. Well, maybe art films. We always need more art films because they never get enough funding. But in terms of science fiction, fantasy, monster movies, we have a bunch of them. But after a while, well, maybe if you're the type of person that kind of wants to change it up a bit, have a different pace. If you make a movie in another country outside of your own, the culture of that country will dictate how that movie is made. If everybody, the director, the actors, especially the director and the screenwriter and the crew, film in a different country, it's just gonna feel different than your own. And there's a freshness, there's an automatic freshness to that, which is great. And thank goodness there are a lot of geeky monster science fiction, fantasy, action, adventure movies around the world, more so now than ever in history. And it's great. I don't know if there was a time where, because Hollywood was the focus of the world in terms of making movies, all the other countries were trying to make movies like they were in Hollywood. I don't think so anymore. I think enough movies are being made around the world where they're just going to keep, you know, if we're making a movie in South America, you know what? Let's make it feel like it's in South America. If it's in Europe, make it feel like it's in Europe. That was what's so great when I was in college and I could only afford like $1 videos to rent. You know, when I was in college, it was like $2.50 a video, and this was like VHS tapes. So it shows you how old I am. But the new movies were always like $2.50, and actually later on it was like $3.50 to rent new movies. But if you rented foreign films or classic movies, many of which were foreign films, it was only a buck. So I just gobbled up all the foreign films I could get my hands on. And I wound up, would I say falling in love with them? Yeah, I guess. Yeah, they have a special place in my heart, foreign films. Just because if you go on Netflix and you see action adventure and then every other action adventure movie, it seems like it, the Made in America looks the same, sounds the same. You put a foreign movie on and all of a sudden you got automatic uniqueness, hopefully. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. But first, I don't know if you caught Saturday Night Live this last weekend. What day was that? Saturday, January 16. But Adam Driver was on. Adam Driver is Kylo Ren in the new Star Wars movie, The Force Awakens, and he was the guest host on Saturday Night Live. This guy's good, and he's funny, and he takes his work seriously, but he doesn't take himself seriously, which makes him even more funny, because he felt so natural with it, and you can tell the guy really tried. You know, and he worked at it. He was in a lot of skits, but I'm going to focus on that one skit that everybody is talking about, is when Adam Driver as Kylo Ren dresses up as undercover boss Kylo Ren. And I've added a link to the YouTube video on my webpage, thedailynight.net, thedailynight with a K.net. And you can click on it. It's on YouTube right now. It's getting a lot of buzz. And I even made a quick meme about it. You know, right before Force Awakens came out, people were speculating, who is Kylo Ren? Who's Kylo Ren? Well, guess what, folks? Matt is Kylo Ren. Matt is his alter ego on the Undercover Boss parody. And you have to see his makeup and his orangey blonde Napoleon Dynamite type wig. If you thought he was emo in the Force Awakens movie, you have to see this skit. So if anything, like, pause this right now, go to YouTube, look up that video, or go to my webpage and play the video. It's about 4 minutes long, 4.5 minutes long, and it's hilarious. And what I'd like to, there's a little part in there. There's a whole bunch of little Easter eggs within the skit also. Within well, it's actually a little short film. But there are a lot of little Easter eggs, one of which, and I had to rewind this, my DVR, to see the actual detail. But the 501st, which is the Vader's fist, they are cosplayers, Star Wars cosplayers, who dress up as Imperial stormtroopers, Imperial officers, the dark side, the official bad guys. But the 501st, they're wonderful people. Actually, I'm going to shout out to Jeremy. He's one of the 501st in the Southern California garrison. Jeremy, if you're listening, thank you for standing in line with me at the Star Wars celebration. Thank you for talking Star Wars with me for like two and a half hours while we waited in line to get t-shirts. If you went to the Star Wars celebration in Anaheim back in April, I hope your feet have recovered from that experience. Wonderful experience, but man, standing in line and walking, yeah, fun. But yeah, Jeremy, thank you for talking with me. It's Jeremy and Billy. Both of them are from the Southern California Garrison. So, but in the Adam Driver SNL skit, one of the stormtroopers that talks about him, about Kylo Ren, they put a caption when they were interviewing him, and it said 501st Garrison or Legion, 501st Legion. And when I saw this, like, yeah. By the way, folks, look up 501st Legion. If you have a charity event, or if you want to go to an event where the 501st are appearing, check out their website. They have garrisons all over the world. So hopefully, if you have one that's near where you live, wherever you are in the world, especially the United States. Last I heard, that last count, there were, I think, at least 5,000, maybe 7,000 members now, just in the U.S., and a whole lot more around the world. They're wonderful. I actually follow on Facebook. I follow the Southern California Garrison. I follow the 501st official Facebook page, and I follow the Philippine Garrison, because I'm Filipino. And you folks, you have to see what these guys do around the world. It's amazing, because each garrison is unique unto their own country, so they have different stuff going on. I remember in America, back, what is it, the Stan Lee's Kamikaze, they were promoting the Avengers movie, and so they have, you know, they have their set up, at the convention. But the one in, is it, I think it's in the Philippines. I saw it through the Philippine Garrison Facebook page. They had a full-size Hulkbuster armor set up at the Philippine, I forgot what the official convention was called. This was back in summer of 2015, maybe August or September. But they had this, the full Hulkbuster armor. I mean, it was like 25 feet high. And you could walk up there and pose with it like you were inside the suit. So, like, I would suggest if you want to see diversity, actually, especially since today is Martin Luther King's birthday, so let's promote diversity. See what people are doing around the world. Great stuff. That's why, sort of, it was just good timing that I'm doing this podcast. And in case you're wondering about the title, The Beasts of Many Nations, it's a play on the Idris Elba movie, Beast of No Nation. So I figured, okay, I'm going to talk about all these geeky foreign movies that and each one of these, I really, really enjoyed, and I've seen at least twice. So go watch Adam Driver, come back here, and we'll talk about these monsters, science fiction, and other geeky movies from around the world. So I'm actually kind of excited to talk about these. So let's go. Let me check my recording. I'm recording well. All right. So the first movie I'm going to talk about is The Host. It's a very small movie in terms of America, but I think it got a lot of buzz in Korea where it was filmed. It's a Korean film crew, a South Korean monster film. And I'm going to jump straight to what I liked about this movie is it didn't feel like a normal monster movie. I think because it was filmed in another country outside of America, it's not your typical pace. It's not the typical beats that we're used to. The closest I would compare this to is the Cloverfield movie that was shot in America with an American film crew. But it's still very different. Cloverfield felt like it was a huge movie shrunk down to a handheld video camera movie. But it still felt like an American production, and the story, in my opinion, just went on too long. You know what? Here's a tangent. J.J. Abrams is coming out with a sequel to Cloverfield called 10 Cloverfield Lane. So look that up. I'm not going to have it in the show notes, but look that up. But let's get back to The Host. All these movies, no matter how much I talk about them, I would just suggest you go check it out. Go watch it. Some of them, I know The Host is on Netflix right now. So if you have Netflix, I think half these movies you can watch on Netflix right now. The Host is basically, to me, it's like a cat and mouse hide and seek movie. And the cool part is the focus is not on the monster. The focus is on these just regular people, Korean people, who are just going about their daily business when this monster stuff starts happening in their area. And, you know, there's adults, there are kids involved, and it's just fun. It's what I liked about it is it felt intimate, and it felt like you could just turn it on any time of day. You don't have to make an event of it. You don't have to go to the theater and bring popcorn and get your friends. You're kind of just kicking back on the couch, watching TV. It's like, I'm going to watch The Host, and it's fun. It's not that scary. I'm actually trying to stay away from the super, super scary movies. I know there's a bunch of great horror movies from around the world, but I'm going to focus on monster movies that not that much blood. So pretty much it's like maybe PG-13 and a soft R at the worst. All these movies I'm going to talk about. So, The Host, it's great. It felt fresh. If you watch one of these movies every week for the next month, I think you're going to start to get a taste of, if you don't already have it, you're going to start to get a taste for foreign movies. Yeah, I can't really say that much more about The Host because it's a very simple storyline. Go watch it. I added a link to the movie on my website, so check it out. The next movie is, this is doing double duty for me. It's Monsters. It's the very first movie by Gareth Edwards. If that name sounds familiar to you, this dude is directing Rogue One, the new Star Wars movie coming out this Christmas. So Gareth Edwards, the story here is, the Monsters is another very small movie. I don't know what the budget is. Oh my goodness. Yeah, on Wikipedia, according to Wikipedia, the budget was less than $500,000. I heard that Gareth Edwards actually made a pilot, a shortened movie that he later, after he got funding, he made into this longer movie. But the original short movie, he shot with his friends, and then he actually added all the special effects inside his own home computer and made this small movie. And then he got funding, and then he made this bigger $500,000 movie. So the Monsters, the plot line is, you have two Americans, who a woman and a man, don't know each other at the beginning of the movie, and they wind up in Mexico. I think he is a photographer. It's been a while. I saw this right when it came out on video. So this was in 2010, so that's what, more than 5 years ago. But they get stuck in Mexico because the flights were canceled or something, like something's happening. And so the photographer meets the woman, and they decide that they're just going to walk back from Mexico to the U.S. The problem is the Monsters originally landed. Now, supposedly they came from space. They came they fell like asteroids or something, and they came from space and they got plopped down mostly in the Mexico area, South America. So what America did was build a wall to keep the Monsters away from the United States. There's parallels and metaphors and allegories, or whatever you want to call it. So they built a wall. So what happens is, it's not that easy to cross the border to escape the Monsters. So you're in Mexico, you want to get back to the U.S., you got this big wall in front of you, you have to find the place in the wall where there are people that you can, there are gates, and the walls are like 200 feet high. The Monsters are pretty big. I think the Monsters were, just my estimation, about maybe 100 feet high. Maybe 150 feet high. I don't think they were that tall. So it's basically these two people walking back to America, trying to figure out, hitching rides with locals. And it's, by the way, all these movies, don't expect big productions. They're fairly small budget movies, intimate. Pay attention to the story. Pay attention to the uniqueness, the quirkiness of it. Probably the biggest attraction to these movies, at least to me, was how quirky they are, and how the quirkiness is freshness, and they were unique. They had their own sense of humor. A lot of these are in a not too much, not too twisted, but twisted in an almost an innocent way. They're quirky. So, and monsters, you don't see a lot of monsters. It's more what you don't see. It's like the original Jaws movie with Steven Spielberg. It's more the story that you pay attention to, and then when you see the monsters, you're rewarded for it. Man, it's like I want to go through these movies and then just go straight to Netflix and start watching one of these right now. I'm probably going to watch The Host is on Netflix. Troll Hunter is still on Netflix. I think Monsters? I think Monsters is on Netflix. Run, Lola, Run is not on Netflix. But I think Elysium may be on Netflix. And I think Snowpiercer is on Netflix. So those are some of the movies I'm going to be covering. Let me see. How is The Host, which I just talked about earlier, and Monsters different? The Host is more... lighthearted because there's kids in it, so you have a little bit of a kid's point of view. Monsters is more serious but insightful because they are older people. They're almost like borderline emo. There's a couple of scenes of reflection in Monsters, which is kind of cool. They sit on top of the a Mexican pyramid and look out. And it's a beautiful scene. I think it was dawn. They were just sitting there resting. They're going to sleep there for the night. And they were just looking over the whole jungle below them. And it, of course, the dialogue is great. The great, 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 great dialogue. Expect more story and dialogue driven from these movies and not as much monsters, and you won't be let down. So all right, next movie is Run, Lola, Run from Germany. This has no monsters, but it's sort of has a geeky, because it's a cult movie, it's got a geeky bent to it. And if you it's one of those movies where, like, when Pulp Fiction first came out, and you people, or no, actually, when Reservoir Dogs, Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs came out, and not that many people saw it, but when you mentioned, hey, did you see Reservoir Dogs? And the people, oh yeah, let's talk about it. This movie is like that. Run, Lola, Run. It's officially a German movie, but it has been embraced in America. And the nice thing about this movie is, how long is this? It's fast. It's 81 minutes. It's an hour and 21 minutes long. And it's literally Lola running. I'm not kidding you. Through a series of unfortunate events, Lola knows people, some of whom are complete idiots who get themselves in trouble, and Lola has to bail them out. And she can only do it by running from point A to point B to point C to point D, etc., etc. And if you think that's a preposterous plot, you would be right, and they managed to pull it off, and it's excellent. This is one of those movies where I doubt that it will ever be remade or copied, because it is so beautiful in its execution, in its originality, and its audacity. It's in your face. Some of the stuff that happens in this movie, you're going to go, I can't believe that just happened. Especially the final punchline of the movie. It's Lola does more than running. Lola does this one thing at the very end that just stops the world. And that's all I'm going to tell you. But it's wow. Yeah. I saw this, when did this come out? 1998. So I was out of college already, but I was still, I guess, relatively young. And when I saw this, I go, "That's that is a foreign movie. That is an art film. I feel more cultured now. I'm gonna go have sushi." So, Run Lola Run. Oh, and Lola is Franca Potente. I think Potente. I don't know if that's how you or Potente. Okay, but Potente. Franca Potente. And she, if the name doesn't sound familiar, when you see her, you will know who she is, because she was Jason Bourne's love interest in the first two Bourne movies, The Bourne Identity and The Bourne Supremacy. And that was a tragic ending to her character. But and if you've already seen the first two Bourne movies and you see her, you know that she's a no-nonsense kind of gal, and she's an action gal. You know, she's built for running and not being the damsel in distress. She can take care of her own self. So, Run Lola Run, she is literally the hero of this movie from beginning to end. And she's the nice thing too, in terms of the whole mythological angle of this, she is the reluctant hero. It's not like she wanted to be the hero. It just, shit fell into her lap and she had to take care of business and she ran. fun movie. Hopefully you can get your hands on it. I couldn't find it on Netflix. You might have to rent it on maybe on Amazon or, and it's, I don't think it's ever been on cable, you know, like HBO, Showtime or channels like that. But, if you find it, I think you'll be happy. Let me see. Oh, you know what? Let me see. Who directed it? Tom Tykwer. No, okay. I don't know the director. It has a little bit of a Leon the Professional feel to it. If you've seen that, what's his name? Let me look up real quick. Leon the Professional. The Jean-Luc Besson film with Natalie Portman and Jean Reno. You've seen the movie probably. It's always on cable. So that's The Professional was shot in America, but it has a French European feel to it. So Run Lola Run reminds me of that for maybe the cinematography, the use of color. By the way, let me know what you think. I've been talking to you, but I would like to hear from you if you want to send me messages. The best way to contact me is actually through Facebook. The link is on the website. Let me see. I just want to make sure I get this right. My Facebook page is in facebook.com/thedailynight with a K. So easy enough. It's on my website. That's the best way for you to contact me. You can also contact me through Twitter or Instagram or through my website. But I always check Facebook because there's always fun things happening on Facebook. So visit my Facebook page, like it. I can always use more followers, and you can contact me there. And I always post whenever I have a podcast out, a new show. I post the link to it on my Facebook page, and so you can comment there. So again, thank you for listening, putting up with me for as long as I'm talking. Let's go on with the show. The next movie is District 9. This is probably the most well-known out of all these movies. District 9 by Neil Blomkamp is a sort of a found film documentary type movie. Literally about, it's about an innocent, goofy, you can almost say stupid guy who, accidentally starts turning into an alien. And Sharlto Copley is the guy, and he's borderline likable. I think the only reason you're going to like him is because he doesn't really know what he's doing half the time. He's sort of a pencil pusher, bureaucratic lemming. He's a follower. And he's kind of a coward, and he's an office man. You know, he wants to have the same job forever and ever. He doesn't really want to aspire to anything great beyond what he's working at right now. But he totally loves his wife, and I'm trying to remember. Does he have a kid? I don't think he has a kid, but he's totally in love with his wife, but. He is the typical guy living in a quiet desperation. And all of a sudden, this shit falls into his lap, just like in Run Lola Run. So this guy, Sharlto Copley, oh, what's his name in this? It's such a goofy name. Let me look up real quick. District 9... I'm looking up on IMDb. Because the way he says his name is funny and annoying at the same time. Vikas Vandemerva. So let me say that again. Let me spell it first. WIKUSVANDEMERWE. Now, it's probably a fine, normal name in South Africa, where the movie is set. But the way he says it, it's annoying. Hello, I'm Vikas Vandemar. And it's almost like he is ashamed of saying his own name, because he slurs it and he says it as fast as possible. So you're trying to figure out, like, what the hell is his name? Vikas Van Vikas Vander Mer, is his name Merv? Is it Merv Murray? So, and he says his name a lot because a part of it is they're shooting an official film. I think it was like a news crew. So he has to introduce himself over and over in the movie. And it was annoying at the very beginning. His character is annoying as hell, and you just want bad things to happen to him just for comedic purposes and for catharsis. And then the stuff happens to him, and then you start to feel sorry for him, and you feel even more sorry for him. And then what happens is he becomes again the reluctant hero, where he a series of events happen in the short span that he transforms, to where at the very end it's a weird kind of triumphant, but you're cheering for him and you want him to do good, and even though at the beginning you thought this guy's a total putz. So, and this Sharlto Copley, let's transition. And the ending of this movie, oh man, it'll break your heart. Oh, it'll break your heart. I'm not gonna tell you. Go watch District 9, and you just sit through it. Even if it gets kind of, some of these movies get kind of boring because we're in America. We're used to all these explosions and the Michael Bay movies, and you know every 30 seconds something big and expensive happens. And, you know, these other countries ain't as rich as America. So you got to, you know, you got to let them tell you the story instead of just giving you fireworks for 2 hours straight. But District 9 is by Neil Blomkamp, directed by. And the next movie, and then this was like his big first big movie, and all of a sudden the world loved him. Let's go make another movie. So he made Elysium. So again, Neil Blomkamp started with District 9, and then he made Elysium. I think, you know what? District 9, maybe I got the Monsters, the Gareth Edwards. No, Gareth Edwards made his small little movie for Monsters, and I think Blomkamp did the same thing for District 9. He made a small little movie, and then some studios got a hold of his little short film, like 10-15 minute film, and then they gave him a lot more money, $30 million to make District 9, which is still nothing compared to what, you know, Star Wars: The Force Awakens cost $200 million to make, but it's a much bigger movie. So, all right, so Elysium. Elysium stars Matt Damon, directed by Neil Blomkamp, and also has Charlton Copley, who is Vikas Vandermeer back in District 9. The hero of District 9 is now the absolute asshole villain of Elysium. And you love hating this guy. He's a good actor. I hope he's not like that in real life. But he was also in the A-Team movie with, who are those people? Well, the A-Team, look it up, the A-Team movie. It's pretty good action, but Charlton Copley he's nuts, and he's always on edge, and he's amazing, and you savor moments when he's on film, when he's in front of the camera. So that's Charlton Copley. Now, Elysium, Matt Damon is the good guy. He is Elysium is this is a kind of a post-apocalyptic Earth where everything goes wrong on Earth. The rich people have enough money, so they get their money together and they build a space station orbiting the Earth. And it's a circular looking space station, and it's literally like this exclusive gated community, but in space, and only the rich people can go there. And they have all these amenities, I mean, medical marvels, where you if you break your leg, you go into this machine, and the machine heals you within minutes, puts you back together. So no matter what your sickness, so supposedly on Elysium, this floating space station hovering above the Earth, no matter what happens to you, you will never get sick. Maybe you'll die naturally of old age when you're really, really old. But so you have the rich, healthy, happy, rich people living in this space station, while the poor people are back on Earth trying to survive, and just problems everywhere, poverty everywhere. So the poverty, Matt Damon is one of the poor people. And where he is, it feels like, it feels like a third world country. It feels like a South American third world country area where he lives. So he's just trying to get by. And through, again, another series of events. Wow, there's like a theme to this too, besides the whole foreign movie thing. What's like the reluctant hero? He, Matt Damon, is the reluctant hero of Elysium. And he gets a chance to go to the rich people space station. And not just him, but take some people with him. So you can stick these sick people into those machines and make them better. So that was his goal. And also, well, that was not just his goal. He also wanted to download important information that would help the poor people. I don't want to get too specific because a big part of the plot line is specifics regarding this stuff. So basically, the poor people have to, take over parts of what the rich people are doing to help more poor people back on Earth. And it's a great story. It's a nice premise. I actually like this movie. a lot of people did not like this movie at all, but actually I liked it because I guess I was focusing on Matt Damon will probably never let you down ever. He's just solid. So I was focusing on Matt Damon's performance. I was focusing on the idea of the story. It's kind of disjointed, but at the same time, there was, you know, you were rooting for the underdog, so that was kind of driving the movie forward. I guess it gets kind of convoluted once they make it, you know, spoiler alert, once they make it on Elysium and they start, you know, doing their thing, trying to, you know, take over where the rich people are operating. So it has metaphors and analogies and, you know, parallels to what's going on here on Earth right now. Gated communities, the ultra rich owning, you know, 90% of the wealth, the poor and even the middle class now in America are living paycheck to paycheck with no real savings for retirement. That kind of thing. I think the longer this recession lasts, the more Elysium becomes a notable movie to watch. And it's beautiful. I'd say it's actually more beautiful than District 9. Oh, by the way, I didn't even talk about the special effects on, let's see, I think pretty much all these movies, the special effects are amazing. They're tight. They don't look cheesy. They're appropriate. They're not overdone. They're not underdone. And they're not show-offy. You know, they're not there just to, oh, you know, we ran out of script, so let's just throw another monster or another explosion or another spaceship. No, the special effects in all these movies, I think it's because they have, for the most part, very limited budgets. So just like George Lucas, I'm going to go back to the Star Wars thing. George Lucas only had, what, 12 or 13 million to make the original Star Wars. So he had to focus. He had to make the script and the acting and everything non-special effects-y that much better to make up for the lack of budget for the special effects and the explosions. So all these movies are very story-driven, which actually, for me, number one thing is story. Number two thing is the execution of the story in terms of the acting and the directing and the editing. Number three is the cinematography. I guess they all come together. It's got to look appropriate. And special effects are a distant fourth or even fifth or even sixth to me. Because if you don't get the story down, then you're going to have a Transformers movie. You're going to have a Transformers sequel movie on your hands. And you're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars. And in 10 years, nobody's going to care about your movie. But I think the movies that I'm talking about right now, no, they have lasting power. These movies are going to last for a while. Let me take a drink of water real quick. I keep thinking that we are 44 minutes. Okay, let me get through the rest as fast as I possibly can. Keep this around an hour, even less. So, Elysium. So, if you like District 9, keep your expectations low for Elysium and watch that. I think they're a good back-to-back. Plus, you get Matt Damon. You know, whenever Matt Damon's on, it's good. Now, the next movie is The Raid Redemption. This is, let's see, this is from Indonesia. And it is a big fight. It's, oh, you know what? Okay, well, I guess if you've seen, what is that Bruce Lee movie? Is it The Game of Death where he has to go up the multi-story building and fight the different characters starting from the ground level And then he wins on the ground level. He goes to the second floor, wins on the second floor, goes to the third floor. He works his way up the building. What Bruce Lee did with Game of Death. That's a movie with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So the Raid Redemption is the same thing, because there's this, like, what it looks like a 10-story building, and you have a mob boss, a gangster boss, at the very, very top. So the good guys, and they're cops. They're local cops, and they know that they have to do a drug bust or a criminal bust on this building. But the building is a fortress. So they have to start at the ground floor, get themselves in, work their way up. And of course, the more they work themselves up the floors, the more good guys die along the way, to the point where there's only a handful of them left when they finally get to the mob boss. That's the movie, folks. And it's, how many minutes is this? This is 101 minutes of fighting. And it's amazing. It's beautiful. It's choreographed, but brutal. I mean, you cannot not choreograph this, because somebody will seriously get hurt if you just let these guys do what they're trying to do in this movie. Just in terms of, it's almost borderline acrobatic, but it doesn't look fake. And how inventive they are. If you watch Jet Li movies, if you watch Jackie Chan movies, how choreographed the fight scenes are, but they look believable, and actually the fight scenes here are more brutal than the Jackie Chan fight scenes. But they are, they're a lot like Jet Li fight scenes, but this involves more than one hero. I think there's at least two or three or four, maybe more, main heroes, and then they have their backup crew, the police force behind them. There's so many scenes. There's a scene where the good guys, the squad, gets trapped in a room, and they are surrounded. They're like on the third floor, fourth floor, and they're surrounded by the bad guys outside the door in the hallway, on the floor above and the floor below them. And they have to defend themselves and figure a way out. Now, if that doesn't intrigue you enough to go watch this movie, figure out a way to rent somewhere. Let me see. I didn't add 13 Assassins in here. I'll talk about... Let me add that right now. 13 Assassins. Let me do The Raid and then 13 Assassins. Duh. 13 Assassins. I always recommend this movie, and then I totally forgot to add it here. So, The Raid is very similar to 13 Assassins, but The Raid is the good guys. A small handful of good guys go up the building while fighting a whole lot more bad guys than there are good guys. And 13 Assassins is 13 Japanese samurai type. And some of them are like retirement age. Like, they don't even want to fight anymore. But they have to defeat this crazy warlord. I think I did talk about this on a previous podcast. But and they have to work their way. They're in 13 Assassins. They enclose this space. It's a small town, where the 13 good guys have to fight like 200, 250 bad guys. And they have to work their way through all, defeating all the bad guys. And of course, the good guys just, they get killed off more and more and more, to the point where there's only two or three good guys at the very end. So, oh man, if you want to treat yourself, watch The Raid Redemption. And then actually watch 13 Assassins first, and then watch The Raid Redemption, and you'll get a treat. If you just want to see fighting, the 13 Assassins, a warning, 13 Assassins is a very hard R. It's very brutal, very violent, a lot of blood, torture scenes. You don't want your kids watching 13 Assassins. They have to be like older teenagers, or if you can monitor what they're watching, fast forward or skip through the torture scenes, and you'll know it when it comes up. Whenever they show people talking, just jump through it. It's part of the story, though. So, yeah, but I recommend 13 Assassins. Maybe if you're a parent, watch it first, and then watch it with your kid, so you know. Maybe just or jump straight to the 45-minute huge battle at the end. And if you're not a parent, and if you're just you're an adult wanting to watch a hard R movie, like a Tarantino type violence, 13 Assassins is your movie. I keep telling people, it's like I wish Hugh Jackman's Wolverine would make a hard R movie where Wolverine just goes berserk. You know, everybody knows he's known for his berserker mode. And if you watch 13 Assassins, the last battle in there, 45-minute battle, if they would just stick Wolverine in there, same fighting, same brutality, but Wolverine would have his claws versus samurai swords. Oh my goodness. Eye candy for the martial arts viewer. That have always wanted a hard R Wolverine movie, which we will probably never get, but we can always dream. Okay, next movie. So watch Raid Redemption from Indonesia. Excellent. I think the Raid 2, I haven't seen the Raid 2, the sequel yet, but I heard it's also excellent. So, all right, next movie, 13 Assassins, I talked about it already. Next movie is Troll Hunter from Norway. Troll Hunter is goofy. Troll Hunter is quirky. Troll Hunter is, from the name alone, come on, Troll Hunter, right? First, you're thinking, is this a comedy? Is this a parody? If it's a found film, is this a horror movie? Am I going to get scared? And then you see the poster. And the first time, when you watch the movie and the first time you see a troll, the anticipation is much scarier than when you actually confront a troll in the movie. And I think for the better, it's a much more enjoyable movie because it's almost like a matter of fact the way these people approach trolls. Because, okay, so, like in the Blair Witch Project, that's probably the most famous first found footage movie ever made, and it was scared the hell out of me when I first saw it. But over time, it's like it's no big deal. People have done better. This is in my opinion, 10 times better than Blair Witch, because this actually delivers, and the characters aren't nowhere near as annoying as Blair Witch Project. In Blair Witch Project, I've talked to people when a movie first came out, and they said, like, "Now we just wanted the good guys to die. They were so annoying. these whiny college kids trying to shoot a documentary." So, Troll Hunter is also college kids, but they're more innocent. They're not as whiny, and they're Norwegian. So, you take a Norwegian group of, I think there were three or four kids, and part of the comedy of this movie is the naivete of the film crew, because they have absolutely no idea what they're getting into. They go into this trip not having any knowledge of trolls, but they heard from, I think they were filming, they were looking for like there were incidents of bear attacks in Norway. I hope I'm getting that right. And they're going in there not knowing what to expect, because they were just, they decided one day they're just going to take a camera and a boom mic and start talking to people in this area, in this Norwegian woods. There's a Beatles song. So they get into this, and again, shit falls in their lap. and they have to deal with these fantastic situations that get more fantastic and more fantastic. And at the very beginning, all they wanted to do is film something happening, and they wind up finding themselves in what is happening, in the middle of it. I mean, right in the middle of it. I'm not kidding, folks. Should I even mention? They get a whole room full of troll farts at one point in the movie. I mean, they were in the troll den with a whole bunch of trolls after a big meal farting. And, you know, we don't have smell-o-visions on our TVs or anything, but when you see it, and it's I swear, it's borderline comedy. It's borderline Saturday Night Live skit. But, and I think, I love the way that comedy takes the edge off the tension and the seriousness of it. The ending is kind of cheesy, but it's kind of expected. Don't expect much from this movie. Just expect trolls, and don't worry about why do trolls exist? What's the physics of it? What's the science of trolls done? Just take it for, you know, suspend your disbelief and just accept it for what it is. It's a fun movie. Troll Hunter from Norway. The last movie is Snowpiercer. It is made by directed by the same director who did The Host, the movie that I started talking about earlier in this podcast 1,000 years ago. Here we go, and going on an hour again. But the director is Bong Joon-ho. It is a Korean film. And go figure, it stars Chris Evans, Mr. Captain America, as the main good guy. And it supposedly it's a small film. What's the budget? Budget. $40 million. That's tiny, tiny budget. Great special effects. Chris Evans is in it. Tilda Swinton is in it. She's going to be the new Doctor Strange movie. Octavia Spencer, great actress. Oh, my God. She's probably the standout actress in this movie, Octavia Spencer. There's a whole bunch of them that are great in this movie. John Hurt is in this movie. Ed Harris, oh, he had a role in this movie. When you finally see Ed Harris, oh, my God. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, you know what? I just realized The Raid Redemption is a whole bunch of good guys trying to break into the mob boss, and they have to work their way up a building. In Snowpiercer, you have the good guys, and they're also impoverished. They're like the outcast, the poor, low income, you know, throwaway people in this movie, similar to the Matt Damon Elysium, the poor people back on Earth. So, again, in Snowpiercer, it's the poor people trying to find a better life by working their way. And the Snowpiercer, the name is the name of the train, which in the movie. So the poor people have to work their way from the back of the train to the front of the train. So the further you go toward the front of the train, the richer it gets, the more amenities you have. So the premise of the story is, again, post-apocalyptic world, where everything goes to hell on Earth, and it becomes an ice age. The temperature drops, everything is frozen, and the only thing running, the only thing on Earth that still has people in it, is this really, 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 really long train called Snowpiercer. And a rich guy, like a Bill Gates level guy or a group of guys, built this train and built the railroad track that it travels on, and the railroad track circles the Earth. Now, don't ask me why the hell it circles the Earth and why the hell it even is moving, because I think there's a whole bunch of metaphors going on. I think it's what we're watching is actually a metaphor for something else. I'm 100% sure of it. Let me take a dramatic drink for pause. Let you absorb what I just said. It's a metaphor for life. Hold on. Okay, so imagine Snowpiercer is the train, and it's traveling around the Earth on this singular, long, looping railroad track. And at the back of the train are the poor people, at the front of the train are the rich people. And I'm not going to tell you anything more about the plot line, because you have to, the story unfolds itself. The more they work their way toward the front of the train, the more is revealed. And it's fantastic. I think that's one of the reasons I left this movie, is the last thing I'm going to talk about is you start to understand the metaphors that's going on. I'm going to talk about one of the metaphors that I found. Okay. If you guys have seen, there's a symbol of a snake eating its tail. So it's like a circular thing, right? You've got a snake curled up into a circle and it's eating its tail. So it's a continuous loop. To me, that's Snowpiercer. That's a train. And there's even a scene in this movie where the train almost looks like it's about to eat its own tail. And when they showed that, I just lost it. It's like, this is it. This is the metaphor. This is exactly what I thought it was. And of course, the whole caste system, the whole class, lower, middle, upper class, a reflection of the world around us right now. And what is needed to maintain order, sustainability, and the sacrifices that the poor have to go through in order for the rich to keep having what they have and to enjoy the life that they have. I'm going to go into a little, you know, op-ed rant right now. It's part of the movie. So if you live in America, if you are not living on the street, or if you're not living in ultra-desperate environments, if you can afford to see a movie now and then, if you can afford to go to dinner now and then, chances are you have it better than 90% of the world, easy. And the problem is the availability of supply in the world and the availability of resources. It's all down to resources and energy. And long story short, that's the same theme with Snowpiercer. There's just this limited amount of resources. They are on a train, after all. There are a limited amount of resources, and how much of the resources do you allocate for everyone on the train? And of course, there's not enough to go around for everybody, so they have to sacrifice the poor. You know, the rich people who have the power, they have to put the poor people in the back. And there's another spoiler with that. Oh, man. It's kind of creepy at the same time. But wow, I'm thinking about all these moments in this movie. Yeah, the more they work their way toward the front of the train, the more fantastic, or you're going to shake your head like, I can't believe these rich people are doing this to the poor people. And it gets more atrocious the more you go toward the front of the train, toward the head of the train. If I had to rank them, I would say probably my favorite out of all these is just in terms of the completeness of it, is Snowpiercer. And Tilda Swinton's performance is amazing. I'm surprised. Well, she did get some awards, but I'm surprised she wasn't nominated for an Academy Award as a supporting actress. So number one is Snowpiercer. Number two, actually, you know, I'm not going to rank them. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you if you're in a certain mood, I'll tell you. Okay. If you're in the mood for, let's start from the most depressing to the least depressing. The most depressing is probably Snowpiercer. And then after that, District 9. And then Elysium. And then Monsters. And then The Raid. And then it gets a little bit more lighthearted, where Run Lola Run is kind of stressful, so I would put that at number three, the third least stressful. And then The Host, and then Troll Hunter. I think Troll Hunter is just goofy. It's almost cartoonish. It's borderline. And then there's a certain preposterousness. Is that a word? It's preposterous, some of these things. It's like, what did they just do? What, the troll that just turned into what? How did that happen? They used what? They used lights? So, in terms of the easiest movie to watch, I'd say Run Lola Run. It goes by fast, and it's just, you're going to shake your head. I can't believe I just saw that, but it's really cool. Especially if you play the lottery, and if you've just bought some tickets to the last Powerball where, you know, two or three people won like $500,000 each, half a billion dollars each. And, you know, of course, and if you didn't have the winning ticket, you will understand Run Lola Run. The most fun is Run Lola Run, Troll Hunter, and The Host. The Host is, you know, the monsters chasing you with some kids. And then the rest are kind of more dark, with the darkest one being, 13 Assassins. I added that, but that's easily the darkest one. Second darkest is probably Snowpiercer. So, if you pick any of these, just depends on what you feel like watching. Read the synopsis of the movies, and they're pretty accurate. So, on that note, now what time do we have? An hour and 8 minutes. That's not too bad. So, there's your foreign films recommendation. These are not necessarily the best foreign films in the geeky science fictiony monster realm, because I didn't even talk about Godzilla. So, but every, you know, Godzilla is a given. You're supposed to watch Godzilla, whatever version. Well, not the Matthew Broderick version, but, you know, the newest version by Gareth Edwards. Gareth Edwards, who directed Monsters, is directing the new Rogue One Star Wars movie. Also directed the latest Godzilla movie, which is, I recommend it. There's not enough monster fighting, I think, in the movie, but the acting is pretty good. So you got the Breaking Bad guy in the Godzilla movie, so he's always solid. That's it, yeah. Happy Martin Luther King Day. Hopefully you get to watch some, if not all, of these movies sooner or later, and have fun, folks. All right, thank you for watching. Thank you for putting up with me for an hour and 10 minutes, and may the force be with you. Thank you.